on hipsters and sports follow-up. Before I wrote my hipster essay, or any of the sports essays that came before it, I had a discussion about sports, those recorded. It was mostly about their value to society or worthlessness in it. The same conversation that appeared in On Sports Part 6. During that conversation, I was asked a question about rebellion. Why rebellion so often targets one's parents, sometimes cultural traditions, or fashion, or other social norms, scholastics, but it so infrequently targets sports. People don't often rebel against sports. Somehow my response became one of hipster scorn. I didn't intend to go in that direction. I don't really know why I did. That's just that's where my reaction took me. And I definitely wasn't planning on following up with an entire essay about the hipster. But then a couple weeks later, I found myself standing in the entryway of Filter for 60 seconds or so, fantasizing about forcible euthanasia. And after writing my girlfriend an email about that experience, about my Filter experience, I decided I should just finish the job and record an Audible essay dedicated to the subject, dedicated to the hipster. So I did. But now that it's done, it doesn't seem like too terrible of an idea to include the recording of the conversation I had a couple weeks prior, my original sort of unthought-out thoughts on the subject, my first attempt at appraising the modern hipster, in which I was just working through those initial thoughts, those initial ideas out loud. So I'll play that recording in just a second. But when I finally did sit down to write the actual hipster essay, a lot of what I said in my response in that original conversation did end up getting covered. But it still offers some kind of some summarizing points concerning both hipsters and sports. So I'll play that recording now. Don't feel you have to listen. This is the least interesting Audible essay I plan on posting. All right, this.
Now that was a good point, what you said about rebellion and... You take a teenager who's sick of his parents. Oh, my parents are this and that, and they're rebelling against kind of the parental authority, but they're not rebelling against sports. It brings up an interesting point about rebellion and what is it? And it's this, to me, it's this sad phase of pretending that there's something to rebel against, and it leads to like the indie crowd where it's everyone is competing in matters of taste. They're all still consumers, you know. They're buying thick framed glasses because it's counterculture, and then I'm a unique person and I'm establishing an identity. But like, did you buy those? Did somebody sell you those glasses? Did a corporation send out the market equivalent of a scout, of like a sporting scout, and kind of figure out what people are into, figure out the trends, and then mass produce those frames that you purchased with your wage labor job? I mean, how does that, what are you rebelling against? That doesn't escape consumerism. It doesn't escape this kind of pattern and cycle of what everyone else is doing. And so when people think they're rebelling, what is the approach here? Are you naked? You know, are you knitting your own sweater? Did your glass, the frame, those thick counterculture frames of the glasses you're wearing, did you make those yourself with sticks you found in the woods? Like, no, you bought them. So it's just a bunch of people trying to compete in taste and fashion and interests by buying things and what they watch and what they listen to. And you know, in MySpace, if you remember the MySpace crowd, we could really decorate your MySpace page and like, look how much of an individual I am. You know, here's the band that I listen to. Like, okay, are you the one making that music? No, but I like them. You know, and it's people competing in that to me is just weird because it's people accomplishing nothing and just being the ultimate consumers. I mean, the person who goes to the lens crafters and just, okay, just give me whatever the cheapest thing you have that I'm not going to feel on my, it's not going to pinch my nose in a weird way, and it'll hold my prescription well and won't break, and whatever's cheapest. That 44-year-old man is an indie through and through. You know, he doesn't care what people think about him. And I mean, that's something of a counterculture. The 20-year-old guy who spends $200 on a 3-cent frame of glasses because he thinks it's counterculture, but and it's just some corporation that has produced this thing knowing that there's this idiot with a wallet ready to buy that to me is just, it's just funny of the rebellion, what people rebel against, or in the words of John McCrae, the singer from Cake, the speaker, he doesn't really sing his words, he just talks them. And so he just kind of says his lyrics, but that lyric of excess ain't rebellion, you're drinking what they're selling. Like, it's so clever that's all it is. Like, what are people rebelling against? But you make a good point that it's not often about sports, except for the people who are bad at sports. And so they're using it as this kind of excuse. It's not that I'm bad, I don't like it, and so I don't want to participate. They're just embarrassed to participate because it's something that they're not good at, and they don't want to display that. You know, I don't want to exhibit things I'm terrible at, too, and that's why, there's all sorts of things. That's why I don't go to the ski slopes. I mean, it's a humiliating experience. I've been twice, and I'm terrible, and I don't want to go and pretend like I can do it, I don't talk about things that I don't know. You know, if I don't have something to say about a subject, I usually don't bring it up because it's just embarrassing to have some sort of conversation come up. Like, I have nothing to contribute, and if I try, I'm just going to embarrass myself. I think it's the same thing with sports. You know, people don't participate if they're terrible at it, it's just going to embarrass them. But for everyone else, yeah, you're right. They don't rebel against sports. There's just a tradition that stays intact. But I think people should question those traditions. You know, the child of a set of Catholic parents is likely to be Catholic, much more likely than the child of a couple of Muslims. Obviously, that's a rare sight. Is the crucifix wearing child of some Muslim parents? I mean, I've never seen it. Maybe it exists. I'm sure it does somewhere, but I've never seen it. But I think it's important to question our traditions. You know, otherwise, if at age three your tradition is taught that, like, look, you know, you're a woman and you're here in Afghanistan, you put on this burlap sack, you know, put on your burqa. Yeah, I know it's 180 degrees outside. I mean, it's like the inside of a nuclear bomb. And I need you to wear this you know, cloth bag. Like, that's a tradition that's unhealthy. And I think until people start questioning those traditions, and you can't drive because it doesn't permit that in the Quran. It doesn't specifically say, you know, I mean, this was written quite a while before the invention of the automobile. You know, the internal combustion engine wasn't really a thing yet when the Archangel Gabriel was announcing what needed to be written by an illiterate, you know. It seems like all traditions should be questioned, and sports should be one of them, and our enthusiasm in sports, and, like, yeah, it's a cultural thing and it upholds it, but it's something that people should question, and it's not that it has to go away, it shouldn't be immune to that level of criticism. Like, for Easter, I grew up in this Presbyterian church, and my grandma would come over with Easter baskets full of, you know, peeps and that kind of fluorescent green see-through grass in a basket. And I loved it, and I like Easter. So, I mean, do I think that it's the day that Jesus, you know, rose from a cave and, you know, after, like, Friday to Saturday to Sunday, which is somehow 3 days, and none of that. But I think the tradition is nice, and I like that part, and it doesn't hurt anybody. You know, the tradition doesn't cost anyone their retirement. It doesn't it doesn't infect anyone with a disease. You know, those kinds of traditions are fine because nobody is wounded or hurt or impacted in any kind of uninvited way, other than, you know, unless they get, you know, upset when they see, like, he is risen or something. But then I would argue that's their problem. But, you know, I mean, there are certain things like over, like, sports, how it financially and the corrupt college system, where it actually does affect. It affects me, it affects everybody, and in ways that they don't really piece together. So I don't think that we have to jettison every tradition in the to be more compatible with the digital age or anything. You know, I mean, it's that some of those Stone Age celebrations are very fitting to the kind of space age. I mean, they calm us, they center us, they ground us, whatever. I think it's healthy to question before continuing or before giving them up. It's not unhealthy to know something's effect or origin. And at that point, you know, keep it up, give it up, whatever. But oblivion is not, but this kind of blind obedience, and I think that's not the best solution to anything.
CourtneyJensen.com